Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to speak to Tom Hunt about growing a SaaS using a podcast. Tom builds and grows software businesses. He built a podcast host called BCast. He's also a fellow podcaster. His podcast is Confession of a B2B Marketer. He also writes amazing SaaS growth case studies at saasmarketer.io. Be sure to check it out. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for that beautiful intro.
So tell us, how did you start working with software startups?
So yeah, it all started in 2014 where I was working for a large consulting business, and I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. And so when you're not technical and you're trying to build a business on the internet, you kind of fall back into marketing, or I fell back into marketing. And so I started learning how to sell stuff on the internet, and it started out just with affiliate offers. And then I soon realized that to build a sustainable business, you need to create assets, you need to build assets. And one good way of doing that is by building software tools. And so the first thing that we built, or I built, was we actually transitioned. We had a service business where we were matching people in the Philippines with online entrepreneurs, and that business wouldn't scale. So we built a marketplace connecting these two groups of people. It was called Virtual Valley. It's like Upwork, but just for Filipino virtual assistants. And so it wasn't necessarily SaaS, or we didn't charge in a SaaS model, but we were building software to facilitate these interactions, and we were taking a commission, or I think it was 10% of the wages of the people from the Philippines. And so that was the very first time that I built and marketed a software business.
Cool. How did the idea for BCast came to be?
Yeah, so BCast now is a B2B podcast host. And this came to be because about 2 years ago, I was the head of marketing at a B2B SaaS company called Ebster. They would make sales software. And so I joined, and I decided there was this new persona that we were going to target. And the persona was a person called sales operations. The sales ops person is the person who's responsible for making the sales team effective. And so I, as the head of marketing, reached out to these people to try and get them to talk to me so I could understand them, so I could learn how to sell to them. And obviously, they just completely ignored me. But then, like, quantum leap was to create a new media asset to support this person in their career. There wasn't sales ops with this new growing trend, and there wasn't any real blogs, like no real media sites that were helping these people. So we created Sales Ops Demystified, which is now, I believe, the most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We still run. And we started specific sales ops people. After about 20 interviews, we ended up closing a significantly sized deal with a business called Intercom because we interviewed their VP of sales operations on the podcast. And so, and then at the same time, over those 20 interviews, we got a great SEO benefit, great social exposure, and I was learning a shed load about the persona. And so for me, this was like an incredible exercise. It was like a marketing campaign that you could tie back to direct ROI. Then also you had the long-term brand social SEO benefits. And so I was like, why are more businesses not doing this kind of thing? And at the time we were hosting this podcast on a podcast host that I didn't think was well suited to the type of podcast we were running. And so that's the opportunity that I saw, that there's this growing market for businesses that are looking to podcast, and there's no host in the market that we think is serving that need adequately.
Cool. So let's talk about how SaaS founders can start thinking about whether podcasting is something that would benefit their SaaS, help them grow their revenue, grow their MRR, get more people to sign up or demo their product. How do we start? How do we decide which company is a good fit and are there any companies that would not be a good fit to try podcasting?
Yeah, so I think first we need to understand what a podcast is. And to like really go back to basics, it's simply an audio content feed. So it's like your blog is a written content feed that you update every day or every week or every month. A podcast is simply an audio content feed that it can be updated other than when you want to update it. And so when trying to understand whether a SaaS business should podcast, you have to explain, like, should your SaaS business be creating content? If yes, then podcasting is actually quite a high leverage way of creating a lot of content. I think the real benefit for SaaS companies with podcasting is not necessarily monetizing the audience, but it's by building relationships with the people that you co-create the audio content with, e.g. the guests. Podcasting is actually a really bad way of building an audience. Like the organic discovery of podcasts is relatively non-existent. Like it's really hard to find new podcasts at the moment, and that's probably changing. And so if you don't have any existing audience, it's not the best way to grow an audience. There are probably better ways to do that. But it is a really good way to start building strategic relationships with potential customers, with potential partners, with potential influencers of your market. And that's actually the core benefit. With the Sales Ops podcast I was just mentioning, it was almost impossible for me to get in front of and talk to these people we're trying to sell to. But after like 15 interviews, we had a perfect, like, ideal customer coming into our office in central London to be interviewed, whereas previously they would just ignore us. Now, obviously, we can't just sell to them straight away, but we have the relationship and we can further that by maybe requesting that they give us feedback on the product or requesting that they collaborate with us on another piece of content or they kind of speak at our event, right? And so that's the benefit. I think if your SaaS company could benefit by building relationships with partners, influencers, or potential customers, then it's definitely something you should consider.
So how do we go about starting all of this? This must be really difficult, right? There are so many tools out there. How do we know which to choose?
Yeah, I think the first thing is podcasting is getting crowded. And so the first thing we need to do is define why, like how and why someone should listen to your podcast over someone else's. And that could be because you're helping that type of person like a little bit more specifically, like we focus just on sales ops, right? Or it's because you have some experience that other people don't have and therefore you can share that with them. But there has to be some kind of reason why your podcast would be different. So that's the first thing. The second thing, before you get any tools, I would simply start reaching out to people and trying to get them to jump on your show. That's probably the first thing you do. And the only thing you need to do for that is probably a proposed name of the podcast and a Zoom account. And because I think that if it's hard to get guests, and then if you don't enjoy the recording process and the guest doesn't enjoy the recording process, then I think you like maybe it isn't worth actually doing a podcast. All the tools and everything come a bit later. I don't think they're the first thing you need to consider. It's first understanding why you're different, finding guests, and doing the recording.
I think that's a great suggestion, because what do majority of software engineers do? They think about all of those tools, they spend so much time, and it is procrastination. They're researching all of those microphones, the cameras, the backgrounds, and things like this, and not actually starting anything, right? So I love your comment that do not think about this. Start reaching out, think about what the name of the podcast is going to be, what it is going to be about, why people should care, and start reaching out to those people that you'd like to interview. And or maybe you can do it yourself. It doesn't have to be an interview. And correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about getting people on our podcast to interview those people who would be great customers for our product, correct?
Yeah, well, most content marketing campaigns aim to create amazing content for the audience and then somehow monetize that either by getting people to opt into a list or selling them, getting them to convert to a free trial, right? That's like most content marketing. What we're talking about here is that, yes, we're going to do all that. We're going to create amazing content that improves the lives of the audience. But we also want to try and ascertain some kind of benefit from the people we're creating that content with, e.g. the guests. And so whether that is an ideal customer that after your interview would be happy to give you feedback on your feature roadmap, whether that's a partner who has an audience of your ideal customers that would be happy to partner up on affiliate promotion, for example, or whether that's simply like an expert in your area who it would be great to have on your advisory board, or it would be great for them to test the product and give you feedback, right? And so the reason that we're trying to get an ROI from the collaborators as well as the audience is that if we can get closer to getting an ROI on this content, that means that we can recycle the cash and invest more money in creating that content, which then builds the audience more, which then means you can get bigger and better guests, which then gives you a better ROI. So it's about trying to make the content marketing process as profitable as possible so you can keep creating better content and therefore you can keep building the audience.
Do you have any suggestions how we can start doing that and start getting our content profitable?
Yeah, you've really set me up there, Natalie. That's like the question that we're trying to answer with Bcast. Let's start off on the listener side. There's a massive challenge that I think podcasters have in that a podcast listen or a podcast download is like basically it's the least valuable. It's very invaluable data, as in it's not valuable. It's less valuable than a website visit because you can retarget a website visit with a Facebook ad, whereas a podcast listen, you have no data. You don't know who this person is. You know which app they're listening through. You know which country probably, but that's about it. And so the big challenge in the podcast world is how do you take the download and convert that into something that you can actually, like a permission asset that you can cultivate over time. And so the first thing I would say to anyone that does have a list of people listening to the podcast is, what is the next thing you're allowing them to do? How are you allowing to further the relationship with your brand from the audio content? And it really can be as simple as you take the insights from the first 10 to 20 episodes, produce a PDF with the top insights from those guests, then offer that as an ebook to download to all listeners. At Bcast, we've created this feature that allows you to send a blank email to an email address we create for you that we call it auto opt-in. So we'll automatically opt you into that ebook, and the email goes through Bcast and into the email autoresponder. And so we run these podcasts for clients, right? And so that's the first thing we do after 20 episodes is we create the ebook to maximize the conversion from listener through to lead, we call. So that's the first thing I would urge an existing podcaster that has an audience to do. And the second thing then is going back to these people that you're creating the audio content with. When you create audio content with someone, or when you do any content creation, well, actually, when you go through any like emotional process with someone, it forms a deeper bond. And so the opportunity here is to go and form deeper bonds with people that can somehow benefit you. And so the customer example is really simple, in that if you're just interviewing perfect customers, then after the interview, you have this bond and you can use that bond to ideally get them to do something for you. So back to the sales ops example that I keep talking about, we interview these amazing sales ops people. And then at the end, we simply say, like, would you be happy to take a look at the product roadmap, some features that we just released and are planning on releasing, because we know that you as a sales ops legend knows a lot about this space, and we've actually tweaked our roadmap based on feedback from guests of this show. So the majority of people, guests, will agree to that because you've gone through this emotional roller coaster with them through recording, and then they go through, give feedback. And obviously, if they're looking at the product and it's going to solve a pain they have, then they might move into the sales process. So that's one example. Another example of a different client podcast is he has a piece of software in the online marketing space, and a big channel for growth in the online marketing space is through getting other names or gurus in the online marketing space to promote you as an affiliate. And so with our podcast there, we're simply interviewing people that would be amazing partners. And then at the end of the interview, we say, look, we're selecting 10 partners for this upcoming product launch of our new piece of software. Would you be interested in potentially being one of those 10? If yes, let me show you the product and you can tell me whether you think that is a good fit for your audience. And so we actually haven't launched a podcast yet. We've done about 10 interviews. We have 4 of those product feedback calls lined up out of the 10. And we're probably going to sign one affiliate deal there, right? And so let's say that affiliate deal, the guru has 100,000 people on his email list, sends all of those a promotion to their software, which let's say gets 30,000 opens. and 1,000 clicks, then only 200 people buy a $100 piece of software. 200 times $20,000. And so that's essentially $20,000 worth of revenue minus the 30% affiliate commission is going to be $14,000, right, from that deal that we've closed with that partner. And so that's obviously a significant return on the time and money they spent on producing the 10 podcast episodes. So going back to your initial question on profitability, we need to look at how we can convert listeners into leads, because once you have the email address, you can then move people into the trial or into the demo. But then also, how are you somehow benefiting from the relationships you're forming as you create audio content with these guests?
So I love it. You actually mentioned three pieces of wisdom nuggets, and I think they're really important. Like the first one was creating a PDF with all of those valuable pieces of information from, let's say, your 10 or first 20 interviews, and then you can use that as a lead magnet. Number two is, by interviewing your potential customers, you're creating this bond, and then at the end of the interview, you can ask them to review your product map, for example, to give you feedback. And then number three is you can partner up potentially with some affiliate partners and strike some deals there. So I love those three ideas. By the way, the third one, is it for Bcast or another customer of yours?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I explained. Bcast is like software, but we also have six clients where we run this process for them. So that last example, the partners, that's a client of that service that we run. They are using Bcast to host the software, but that's if a different company.
Got it. Can you give us at least one more example of how we can think, like even before we decide to launch our podcast, how do we think about monetizing it or at least getting some value out of it? Those three were great. Any other things to help us start getting our brain juices in the right direction?
It's pretty insane the amount of content you produce in a 30-minute interview. As we've discussed, we can take those key takeaways, put them in an ebook. At the end of every month, you can also take the key takeaways from that, from all of those episodes you release in a month. Let's say you have four, and you can post those key takeaways as a LinkedIn article on the blog of the host. We recommend that you put every podcast episode on your own blog, optimize that blog post for a search term related to your product, and then take either the key takeaways if you want to write them out or just a transcript and put that on the blog post itself. You can then pull out quotes from the episode and design them nicely, brand aligned with your podcast and with your brand, share them on social media, and obviously tag the guest so that they can go in and share and you get exposed to their network. And one example here is two weeks ago with the Sales Off podcast, one of the guest's colleagues shared the episode. And because the share did so well on LinkedIn, her page on the site of EBSTA was the fifth most visited page on their site during that week, right? And that's from a guest's colleague sharing, and it pretty much went viral on LinkedIn and got hundreds of likes. Other things you can do are pull out just audio clips from the podcast and then create lovely audio form videos that you then obviously will post on the social channels. So what I'm trying to get at here is that podcasting is the highest leverage in terms of time invested to amount of content you get out. If you spend half an hour writing on your own, you're not going to get anywhere close to the amount of content that you can produce in that time period. We have almost an endless stream of content related to their niche that we can pump out. And so if a SaaS business is listening to this and is thinking about investing or like think about the content and social strategy, then a great kind of seed to give you all of the content you need is starting a podcast.
I'm thinking about, yes, you mentioned that there are so many ways to share this content, which is true. But then there are so many things that we need to do as founders and hosts of the podcast to make it happen, right? No one else is going to do it for us. Your service, absolutely, yes, can do it. But within our team, it's only us, the host, right, who can do that. How much time approximately, just to set the expectations right, you think it would take to effectively share one episode, produce and share one episode and make all of those clips, quotes? Because really the success of it depends not as much on how many episodes or how many interviews you're going to do, while this is important, but also what's really important is how effectively you can share it on the internet and all of those groups and all of those social media channels, posting it on your blog. So it is a lot of work.
Yeah, agreed. I've thought a lot about this because obviously our whole, the profitability of our service depends on how time efficient we can be here. So to answer your question, I think there's basically three roles in order to execute a podcast. The first is the host. Now, the host time is normally the most valuable. So we only want the host to be literally seeing the calendar invite for the interview going into their calendar, looking at it 10 minutes before, doing the research, doing the interview, which let's say is half an hour, and then spending 5 to 10 minutes after the interview chatting with the guest. So for that one interview, we basically only want the host to have to do 45 minutes of work. And it is really hard, intense work, because interviewing on podcasts is hard and it's a skill that we have to develop, but that's all we want the host to be doing. The other two roles, one is the editor. Now, you can get insanely cheap, really good editors based around the world from Upwork or from Fiverr, et cetera, that you'll just integrate into your workflow. And so, for example, the way we do this for our client episodes is we have one spreadsheet that we use to communicate with our editor. It's a lady called Olha. She's based in Russia, and she does all of the editing. And so all we do there is as soon as we have the raw audio exported from Zoom, someone in my team looks at the audio, takes out the quote, takes out the 1 minute video, and then hands the audio over to Olha, who will then edit the full episode, pull out the 1 minute clip, and then edit video as well if we're doing video. So we have the editor. We want the editor to be only investing half an hour, let's say, or however long it takes to edit the episode. Let's say it's 1 hour. And then the other person in the middle, I call an operator, and that's the person who's basically responsible for this whole process. But the operator is normally someone who is a bit cheaper than the host. When I say cheaper, I mean probably lower skilled. And it's probably a relatively experienced virtual assistant that you could pay maybe $10 per hour. And so the operator is responsible for the whole system. So they're responsible for finding the guest. They're responsible for ensuring that the host has research on the guest. They're responsible for the editor doing the editing. They're responsible for collating all of those assets and posting them on the blog, for example. They're responsible for buying the transcript if you have to go and buy the transcript from a service. So I would say, in answer to your question, that the operator per episode will probably need to spend about 4 hours. So if we do some math there, 4 hours at $10 per hour, it's $40. Let's say to edit the episode, it costs $30, so that's $70. And the host time, 45 minutes of the host time is probably quite expensive, so maybe that's $100. So we're probably looking, if you're looking at the time cost per episode, it's probably about $200. And that's to get the episode that we upload and also all of the array of social posts that you're going to get out of that is going to cost about $200, which if you compare with a written blog article, I think we'd probably find that that's going to come under that written blog article, obviously depending on how long the article is and how complex the topic is. But I think that $200 is economic and it's probably having a bigger impact than if you were to invest that in written content.
It is true. Just to write a content, get someone to write it, it is going to be more than $200 probably, a well-researched piece of content.
Yeah.
So does the host creates the quotes and then sends it to the editor, or what's the process there? Because no one else can probably know that I want that particular part of the podcast be used as the clip, right? Or this is a great quote. So the host would probably be the one after the interview who needs to jot it down and send it to the editor.
Yeah, so I've actually experimented with this. I've, for the SalesOps podcast, I've done, I think we're coming into 100 interviews now. So, and we've been through multiple iterations. When we started off, I was just interviewing. I wouldn't write any notes. I wouldn't do anything. And then after the operator, this person, would listen and then would define the quote and define the audio clip. That does work if the operator has some kind of knowledge and awareness of the topic. If not, I've also tried where I'm actually writing notes during the interview, and straight after the interview, I write out the key takeaways, define what the audio clip is going to be and define the quote. But then the quality of the interviews was going down because I was spending time writing notes and not looking at the interviews. So what I do now is I do the interview, I write down bullets of things that I really like. And then at the end of the interview, I'm saying, thanks so much for coming on. Here are the things I really liked from the interview today. That's a really great way to finish. And then I'm also just writing notes of what the quotes and what the audio clip should be. And so afterwards, I send the raw audio. I upload it to Google Drive. And then I ping on Slack the operator, the clips that I think we should use for quote and audio. And then from there, the operator takes it away. And I won't see anything else to do with that episode until it goes live. And actually, yeah, I won't ever have to do anything else to that episode, because once the episode goes live, the operator's also managing all the promotion. He's sending it to the guest, aligning up the social posts, etc.
I love that suggestion. I have a couple more things to ask of you. Do you have any tips for us to be a good interviewer?
Yeah, I do actually, because I have to, all of our clients' interviews I listen to and provide feedback. I think the core thing to understand, the interviewing is a skill, just like sales or just like marketing, and you get better with practice and you get better by like consciously reviewing your skills and trying to improve. But I think the one paradigm to understand is that your role as the interviewer is to provide a platform for a guest to flourish, because the gold that you'll get in audio content often comes off script, and it comes when the guest is kind of in flow, you could say. And so then your role as the interviewer is simply to like be on the lookout for when you see the guest's eyes light up and kind of probe lightly in the area to try and push them into a place to perform. So some people think that their job as the interviewer is to perform themselves and to provide the insights and to talk too much. But actually, I would disagree. And I would say that your job is simply to ensure the guest has space to flourish. And that's the best. That's like the most important skill. Of course, there's like little things like doing an intro, doing those key summary things at the end, and asking intelligent questions. But actually, your job is to provide the space to allow the guest to perform. So then it's actually more important to find the right guest. If you find the right guest and you have the ability to enable them to perform, then it's likely that you're going to pull out great audio content.
To paraphrase what you just said, is I did read a really interesting quote. I don't remember who it was from, but they said that the main job of the interviewer is get the person that they're interviewing to tell the best story that they can and share as much greatness as they have within them that they did not even know how to express it. And so your questions really need to help that person tell the story.
Exactly, yeah.
Cool. Are there any other questions that I didn't ask you but I should have?
Yeah, I think there's one more benefit that we haven't mentioned, and that is the positioning benefit. This is, you can see this in many SaaS companies are doing this. If you look at, for example, Outreach have taken the category sales engagement. They've written the book on sales engagement. They now have the sales engagement podcast. Another example is Drift, who have taken the category of content marketing that they've actually created, and then their whole like mission and ethos is around conversational marketing. And so the podcast gives an opportunity for you as a business to spot either an existing category or create a new category and then place your stake in the ground to claim that category and then attach your brand to it. So with the SalesOps podcast, we've kind of elevated the authority of Ebster in the SalesOps space. We have another BCAF customer who have just created the category culture operations, and they have a HR piece of software they're called Charlie HR. And so a great opportunity as well is to try and spot an area or position that is potentially new, that no one exists in, and then claim that with a media asset. And normally a podcast is a good way to do that.
Awesome. Any other last parting words?
The final thing, and this is actually the greatest benefit of the whole podcast thing. We've talked about generating leads, signing partnership deals, but the real benefit for me actually has come in the learning that I've been able to make. And interviewing is really tough. It's really hard, but it's so beneficial because it's a really, really good way to learn, because you're almost forced to pay a lot of attention to someone speaking. And so I don't have really any experience in sales or sales operations, but now after interview like 98, at least it feels like I'm pretty established. And so the hidden benefit to all of this is for you as a SaaS founder, let's say you're interviewing your ideal customers, is that you're going to learn a lot about the field that your ideal customers are in, but you're going to learn an incredible amount about the type of person that you're targeting. So if we go right back to my story at the start about starting the SalesOps podcast, is that I initially set out to try and learn about sales operations people, and no one would talk to me because I was just trying to get their time for nothing in exchange on LinkedIn. But now, after we've spent 18 months and done 98 interviews, yes, we have all this positioning SEO, we've signed big deals with Intercom, but I know that persona like inside out. And so that then informs the Ebster product roadmap and the Ebster marketing team. So that's it. It's learning is the core benefit.
Agreed. Tell us a little bit more about your SaaS podcast, your services. How can you help founders get started with podcasting?
I love studying SaaS company growth. So every 2 weeks, I write a case study on a SaaS company that's grown. So we've done like Ahrefs, SEMrush, MeetEdgar, Veed, ConvertKit. So I publish those. You can go there and read those. So that's probably the first way to like get in touch. And then the way we're building the business is slightly different from like the traditional model in that the front end is the SaaS marketer site where we're aggregating all this attention. And then kind of on the side, you can find out more about the service. And so most agencies would have their agency site and then have a blog on the side. We're like leading with the blog first. And then we have the agency on the side almost. And so we pretty much talked about the agency service. We run this whole podcast process that I just explained for SaaS companies. We do everything apart from hosting. So we want to make the CEO, the head of sales or head of marketing famous, not us. So we do everything for a monthly subscription apart from hosts. And then Becast is the podcast software that enables this process for B2B businesses. And so that's becast.fm. If you want to go and check that out, we do have a free trial on that.
Would you care to share the pricing for your services as well, just in case anyone interested?
Yeah. So it ranges from between currently, and it does change. So it ranges between $1,500 and $2,500 per month, based on the amount of episodes you'd like to be released during that month. And then Becast ranges from like $15 to $75 per month, based on number of downloads.
Sounds good. And if listeners would like to connect personally with you, where would they find you?
On LinkedIn. I accept most connections. So yeah, just feel free to ask me anything related to podcasts.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you for having me, Natalie.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone, and so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people? Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.